Chapter 18. Letter from the Council at Ariminum to the Emperor Constantius. The synod selected 20 bishops, too, and sent them on an embassy to the emperor, with the following letter, which has been translated from Latin into Greek: 3. We believe that it is by the command of God, as well as by the arrangement of your party, that we have been led from all the cities of the West, to assemble at Ariminum, for the purpose of declaring the faith of the Catholic Church, and of detecting those who have set forth heresies in opposition to it. After a protracted investigation, we have come to the conclusion that it is best to preserve that faith which has been continuous from antiquity, and which was preached by the prophets, the evangelists, the apostles of our Lord Jesus Christ, the guardian of your empire, and protector of your strength, by holding on thereto and guarding it to the end. It would have been absurd, as well as illegal, to have introduced any change in the doctrines which were so rightly and so justly propounded by the bishops at Nicaea, with the concurrence of the most illustrious Constantine, the emperor and your father, whose teaching and thought has gone forth and been preached in the universal hearing and reflection of men, and it is the antagonist and destroyer of the Arian heresy, through whose agency not only the deflection from the faith, but all others have been destroyed. There is great danger in adding to, or in taking away from, these doctrines, nor can the slightest alteration be made in any one of them, without giving an opportunity to the adversaries to do what they list. Ursacius and Valens, after having been suspected of participating in and advising about the Arian doctrine, were cut off from communion with us. In the hope of being restored to communion, they confessed their error, and obtained forgiveness, as their own writings testify, through which they were spared and received a pardon from the charges. The occasion on which the edict of forgiveness was conceded, was at the Council of Milan, when the presbyters of the Roman Church were also present. Since we know that the formulary of the faith set forth at Nicaea was compiled with the greatest care and accuracy, in the presence of Constantine, of worthy memory, who maintained it throughout his life, and at his baptism, and when he departed to enjoy the merited peace of heaven, we judge that it would be absurd to attempt any alteration in it, and to overlook so many holy confessors and martyrs, and the writers and authors of this dogma, who have bestowed much thought upon it, and have perpetuated the ancient decree of the Catholic Church. God has transmitted the knowledge of their faith to the time in which you live, through our Lord Jesus Christ, by whom you reign and rule the world. Again have these wretched men, who are lamentable to our way of thinking, announced themselves as heralds of an impious view with unlawful rashness, and have attempted to overturn the entire system of truth. For according to your injunction, the synod was convened, and these men laid bare the view of their own deceit, for they attempted an innovation which they introduced with knavery and disturbance, and they found some companions whom they captured for this nefarious transaction, viz. Germanius, Auxentius, and Keys, who caused contention and discord. The teaching of these men, although it was uniform, exceeded the entire range of blasphemies. As they perceived that they were after all not of the same heresy, and that they did not think alike in any of the points of their evil suggestions, they went over to our symbol, so that it might appear as some other document. The time was indeed brief, but it was sufficient to refute their opinions, in order that the affairs of the church might not be wrecked by them, and that the disturbance and tumult which tossed everything to and fro might be restrained. It appeared the safe thing to preserve the ancient and immovable definitions, and to eject the aforesaid persons from communion with us. We have, for this reason, sent our re-instructed deputies to your clemency, and have furnished them with letters, declaratory of the sentiments of the council. These deputies have been especially charged by us to maintain the truths which were defined rightly by the founders, and to instruct your holiness as to the falsity of the assertion of Valens and Ursacius, that a few changes in righteous truths would produce peace in the church. For how can peace be reproduced by those who destroy peace? They would be more likely to introduce contention and disturbance into the other cities and into the Church of Rome. We therefore entreat your clemency to consider our deputies with gentle audience and mild look, and not to allow the dead to be dishonored by any novel changes. We pray you to permit us to remain in the definitions and decrees which we received from our ancestors, who, we would affirm, did their work with ready minds, with prudence, and with the Holy Spirit. For these innovations not only lead believers to infidelity, but also delude unbelievers to immaturity. We likewise entreat you to command that the bishops who are now absent from their churches, and of whom some are laboring under the infirmities of old age, and others under the privations of poverty, may be furnished with the means of returning to their own homes, in order that the churches may not be longer deprived of their ministry. Again, we beseech you that nothing be taken away from the former decisions, or added to them. Let all remain unchanged, even as it has been preserved from the piety of your father to the present time, so that we may not in future be fatigued, and be compelled to become strangers to our own parishes, but that bishops and people may dwell together in peace, and be able to devote themselves to prayer and supplication for your own personal salvation and empire and peace, which may the Deity graciously vouchsafe to you uninterruptedly. Our deputies will show you the signatures and the names of the bishops, and some of them will offer instruction to your holiness out of the sacred scriptures. Chapter 19. Concerning the deputies of the council and the emperor's letter, agreement of the adherents of Ursacius and Valens afterwards with the letter put forth, exile of the archbishops. Concerning the synod at Nicaea, and the reason why the synod was held in Ariminum. We have now transcribed the letter of the Council of Ariminum. Ursacius and Valens, with their adherents, anticipating the arrival of the deputies of the council, showed to the emperor the document which they had read, and calumniated the council. 1. The emperor was displeased at the rejection of this formulary, as it had been composed in his presence at Smyrna, and he therefore treated Ursacius and Valens with honor, while, on the other hand, he manifested great contempt towards the deputies, and even delayed granting them an audience. At length, however, he wrote to the synod, and informed them that an expedition which he was compelled to undertake against the barbarians prevented him from conferring with the deputies, and that he had, therefore, commanded them to remain at Adrianople until his return, in order that, when public business had been dismissed, his mind might be at liberty to hear and test the representations of the deputies, for it is right, he said, to bring to the investigation of divine subjects a mind unfettered by other cares. Such was the strain of his letter. 2. The bishops replied that they could never depart from the decision they had formed, as they had before declared in writing, and had charged their deputies to declare, and they besought him to regard them with favor, and to give audience to their deputies, and to read their letter. They told him that it must appear grievous to him that so many churches should be deprived of their bishops, and that, if agreeable to him, they would return to their churches before the winter. After writing this letter, which was full of supplications and entreaties, the bishops waited for a time for a reply, but as no answer was granted them, they afterwards returned to their own cities. What I have above stated clearly proves that the bishops who were convened at Ariminum confirmed the decrees which had of old been set forth at Nicaea. Let us now consider how it was that they eventually assented to the formulary of faith compiled by Valens and Ursacius and their followers. Various accounts have been given me of this transaction. Some say that the emperor was offended at the bishops having departed from Ariminum without his permission, and allowed Valens and his partisans to govern the churches of the West according to their own will, to set forth their own formulary, to eject those who refused to sign it from the churches, and to ordain others in their place. They say that, taking advantage of this power, Valens compelled some of the bishops to sign the formulary, and that he drove many who refused compliance from their churches, and first of all Liberius, Bishop of Rome. It is further asserted that when Valens and his adherents had acted in this manner in Italy, they resolved to handle the Eastern churches in the same way. As these persecutors were passing through Thrace, they stopped, it is said, at Nicaea, a city of that province. They there convened a council, and read the formulary of Ariminum, which they had translated into the Greek language, and by representing that it had been approved by a general council, They obtained its adoption at Nicaea. They then cunningly denominated it the Nicene formulary of faith, in order, by the resemblance of names, to deceive the simple, and cause it to be mistaken for the ancient formulary set forth by the Nicene Council. Such is the account given by some parties. Others say that the bishops who were convened at the Council of Ariminum were wearied by their detention in that city, as the emperor neither honored them with a reply to their letter, nor granted them permission to return to their own churches, and that, at this juncture, those who had espoused the opposite heresy represented to them that it was not right that divisions should exist between the priests of the whole world for the sake of one word, and that it was only requisite to admit that the Son is like unto the Father in order to put an end to all disputes, for that the bishops of the East would never rest until the term substance was rejected. By these representations, it is said, the members of the council were at length persuaded to assent to the formulary which Ursacius had so sedulously pressed upon them. Ursacius and his partisans, being apprehensive lest the deputies sent by the council to the emperor should declare what firmness was in the first place evinced by the Western bishops, and should expose the true cause of the rejection of the term consubstantial, detained these deputies at Nicaea in Thrace throughout the winter, under the pretext that no public conveyance could be then obtained, and that the roads were in a bad state for travelling, and they then induced them, it is said, to translate the formulary they had accepted from Latin into Greek, and to send it to the Eastern bishops. By this means, they anticipated that the formulary would produce the impression they intended without the fraud being detected, for there was no one to testify that the members of the Council of Ariminum had not voluntarily rejected the term substance from deference to the Eastern bishops, who were averse to the use of that word. But this was evidently a false account, for all the members of the Council, with the exception of a few, maintained strenuously that the Son is like unto the Father in substance, and the only differences of opinion existing between them were that some said that the Son is of the same substance as the Father, while others asserted that he is of like substance with the Father. Some state this matter in one form, others in a different one. Chapter 20. Events which took place in the Eastern Churches. Marathonius, Eleusius of Cyzicus, and Macedonius expelled those who maintained the term consubstantial. Concerning the churches of the Novatians, how one church was transported. The Novatians enter into communion with the Orthodox. While the events I have above related were taking place in Italy, the East, even before the Council of Seleucia had been constituted, was the theatre of great disturbances. 1. The adherents of Acacius and Patrophilus, having ejected Maximus, turned over the Church of Jerusalem to Cyril. Macedonius harassed Constantinople and the neighbouring cities. He was abetted by Eleusius and Marathonius. This latter was originally a deacon in his own church, and was a zealous superintendent of the poor of the monastical dwellings inhabited by men and women, and Macedonius raised him to the bishopric of Nicomedia. Eleusius, who, not without distinction, was formerly attached to the military service of the palace, had been ordained bishop of Cyzicus. It is said that Eleusius and Marathonius were both good men in their conduct, but that they were zealous in persecuting those who maintained that the Son is of the same substance as the Father, although they were not so distinctly cruel as Macedonius, who not only expelled those who refused to hold communion with him, but imprisoned some, and dragged others before the tribunals. In many cases he compelled the unwilling to communion. He seized children and women who had not been initiated and initiated them, and destroyed many churches in different places, under the pretext that the emperor had commanded the demolition of all houses of prayer in which the Son was recognized to be of the same substance as the Father. Under this pretext the Church of the Novatians at Constantinople, situated in that part of the city called Pelagus, was destroyed. It is related that these heretics performed a courageous action with the aid of the members of the Catholic Church, with whom they made common cause. When those who were employed to destroy this church were about to commence the work of demolition, the Novatians assembled themselves together, some tore down the materials, and others conveyed them to a suburb of the city called Sukhi. They quickly achieved this task, for men, women, and children participated in it, and by offering their labor to God they were extraordinarily inspirited. By the exercise of this zeal the church was soon renewed, and, from this circumstance, received the name of Anastasia. After the death of Constantius, Julian, his successor, granted to the Novatians the ground which they had previously possessed, and permitted them to rebuild their church. The people spiritedly took advantage of this permission, and transported the identical materials of the former edifice from Sychi. But this happened at a later period of time than that which we are now reviewing. At this period a union was nearly effected between the Novatian and Catholic churches, for as they held the same opinions concerning the Godhead, and were subjected to a common persecution, the members of both churches assembled and prayed together. The Catholics then possessed no houses of prayer, for the Arians had wrested them from them. It appears, too, that from the frequent intercourse between the members of each church, they reasoned that the differences between them were vain, and they resolved to commune with one another. A reconciliation would certainly have been effected, I think, had not the desire of the multitude been frustrated by the slander of a few individuals, who asserted that there was an ancient law prohibiting the union of the churches. Chapter 21. Proceedings of Macedonius in Mantinium. Hi's removal from Hi's See when he attempted to remove the coffin of Constantine the Great. Julian was pronounced Caesar. About the same time Eleusis wholly demolished the church of the Novatians in Cyzicus. 1. The inhabitants of other parts of Paphlagonia, and particularly of Mantinium, were subjected to similar persecutions. Macedonius, having been apprised that the majority of these people were followers of Novatus, and that the ecclesiastical power was not of itself sufficiently strong to expel them, persuaded the emperor to send 4 cohorts against them. For he imagined that men who are unaccustomed to arms would, on the first appearance of soldiers, be seized with terror, and conform to his sentiments. But it happened otherwise, for the people of Mantinium armed themselves with sickles and axes and whatever other weapons chanced to be at hand, and marched against the military. A severe conflict ensued, and many of the Paphlagonians fell, but nearly all the soldiers were slain. Many of the friends of Macedonius blamed him for having occasioned so great a disaster, and the emperor was displeased, and regarded him with less favor than before. Inimical feelings were engendered still more strongly by another occurrence. Macedonius contemplated the removal of the coffin of the emperor Constantine, as the structure in which it had been concealed was falling into ruin. The people were divided in opinion on this subject, some concurred in the design, and others opposed it, deeming it impious and similar to digging up a grave. Those who maintained the Nicene doctrines were of the latter sentiment, and insisted that no indignity should be offered to the body of Constantine, as that emperor had held the same doctrines as themselves. They were besides, I can readily imagine, eager to oppose the projects of Macedonius. However, without further delay, Macedonius caused the coffin to be conveyed to the same church in which the tomb of Acacius the martyr is placed. The people, divided into 2 factions, the one approving, the other condemning the deed, rushed upon each other in the same church, and so much carnage ensued that the house of prayer and the adjoining place were filled with blood and slaughtered bodies. The emperor, who was then in the west, was deeply incensed on hearing of this occurrence, and he blamed Macedonius as the cause of the indignity offered to his father, and of the slaughter of the people. The emperor had determined to visit the east, and held on his way, he conferred the title of Caesar on his cousin Julian, and sent him to Western Gaul. Chapter 22. Council of Seleucia. About the same period the eastern bishops assembled, too, to the number of about 160, in Seleucia, a city of Isauria. This was during the consultate of Eusebius and Hypatius. Lennas, who held a brilliant military office at the palace, repaired to this council at the command of Constantius, so that the doctrinal confession might be conducted in his presence. Laurentius, the military governor of the province, was present to prepare whatever might be necessary, for the letter of the emperor had commanded him to render this service. At the first session of this council, several of the bishops were absent, and among others, Patrophilus, bishop of Scythopolis, Macedonius, bishop of Constantinople, and Basil, bishop of Ancyra. They resorted to divers pretexts in justification of their non-attendance. Patrophilus alleged in excuse a complaint in the eyes, and Macedonius pleaded indisposition, but it was suspected they had absented themselves from the fear that various accusations would be brought against them. As the other bishops refused to enter upon the investigation of disputed points during their absence, Lennas commanded them to proceed at once to the examination of the questions that had been agitated. Thus some or others maintained that inquiries ought first to be instituted into the conduct of those among them against whom accusations had been laid, as had been the case with Cyril, bishop of Jerusalem, Astathius, bishop of Sebaste, and others. The ambiguity of the emperor's letters, which sometimes prescribed one course and sometimes another, gave rise to this dispute. The contention arising from this source became so fierce that all union was destroyed between them, and they became divided into two parties. However, the advice of those who wished to commence with the examination of doctrine prevailed. When they proceeded to the investigation of terms, some desired to reject the use of the term substance, and appealed to the authority of the formulary of faith which had not long previously been compiled by Mark I, at Smyrna, and had been received by the bishops who were at the court, among whom was Basil II, bishop of Ancyra. Many others were anxious for the adoption of the formulary of faith drawn up at the dedication of the church of Antioch. To the first of these parties belonged Eudoxius, Acacius, Patrophilus, George, bishop of Alexandria, Uranius, bishop of Tyre, and 30 to other bishops. The latter party was supported by George, bishop of Laodicea, in Syria, by Eleusius, bishop of Cyzicus, by Sophronius, bishop of Pompeiopolis, in Paphlagonia. With these the majority agreed. It was suspected, and with reason, that Acacius and his partisans absented themselves on account of the difference between their sentiments and those of the aforesaid bishops, and also because they desired to evade the investigation of certain accusations which had been brought against them. For, although they had previously acknowledged in writing to Macedonius, bishop of Constantinople, that the Son is in all respects like unto the Father, and of the same substance, now they fought entirely shy of their former professions. After prolonged disputations and contention, Silvanus, bishop of Darsus, declared, in a loud and peremptory tone, that no new formulary of faith ought to be introduced but that which had been approved at Antioch, and this alone ought to prevail. As this proposition was repugnant to the followers of Acacius, they withdrew, and the other bishops read the formulary of Antioch. The following day these bishops assembled in the church, closed the doors, and privately confirmed this formulary. Acacius condemned this proceeding, and laid the formulary which he advocated before Lennas and Laurentius privately. 3 days afterwards the same bishops reassembled, and were joined by Macedonius and Basil, who had been previously absent. Acacius and his partisans declared that they would take no part in the proceedings of the council until those who had been deposed and accused had quelled the assembly. His demand was complied with, for the bishops of the opposite party were determined that he should have no pretext for dissolving the council, which was evidently his object, in order to prevent the impending examination of the heresy of Aetius, under the accusations which had been brought against himself and his partisans. When all the members were assembled, Lennas stated that he held a document which had been handed to him by the partisans of Acacius. It was their formulary of faith, with introductory remarks. None of the other bishops knew anything about it, for Lennas, who was of the same sentiment as Acacius, had willingly kept the whole matter a secret. When this document, 3, was read, the whole assembly was filled with tumult, for some of the statements it contained were to the effect that, though the emperor had prohibited the introduction of any term into the formularies of faith which was not found in the sacred scriptures, yet that bishops who had been deposed, having been brought from various provinces to the assembly, with others who had been illegally ordained, the council had been thrown into confusion, and that some of the members had been insulted, and others prevented from speaking. It was added that Acacius and his partisans did not reject the formulary which had been compiled at Antioch, Although those who had assembled in that city had drawn it up for the express purpose of meeting the difficulty which had just then arisen, but that, as the terms consubstantial and of similar substance had grieved some individuals, and that, as it had been recently asserted that the Son is dissimilar from the Father, it was necessary, on this account, to reject the terms consubstantial and a similar substance, which do not occur in Scripture, to condemn the term dissimilar, and to confess clearly that the Son is like unto the Father, for he is, as the Apostle Paul somewhere says, the image of the invisible God. These prefatory observations were followed by a formulary, which was neither conformable with that of Nicaea, nor with that of Antioch, and which was so artfully worded that the followers of Arius and of Aetius would not appear to be in error if they should thus state their faith. In this formulary, the words used by those who had convened at Nicaea, in condemnation of the Arian doctrine, were omitted, and the declarations of the Council of Antioch, concerning the immutability of the deity of the Son, and concerning his being the unchangeable image of the substance, the counsel, and the power, and the glory of the Father, were passed over in silence, and belief was simply expressed in the Father, in the Son, and in the Holy Ghost, and after bestowing some vulgar epithets on a few individuals who had never entered into any doctrinal contention on one side or the other, all those who entertained any other opinions than those set forth in this formulary were declared to be aliens to the Catholic Church. Such were the contents of the document presented by Lennes, and which had been signed by Acacius, and by those who had adopted his sentiments. After it had been read, Sophronius, a bishop of Paphlagonia, exclaimed, "If we daily receive the opinions of individuals as a statement of the faith, we shall fail in attaining precision of the truth." Acacius, having retorted that it was not forbidden to compile new formularies, as that of Nicaea had been once and frequently altered, Eleusius replied as follows, "But the council has not now met for the purpose of learning what is already known, or of accepting any other formulary than that which has been already approved by those who assembled at Antioch, and, moreover, living and dying, we will adhere to this formulary." The dispute having taken this turn, they entered upon another inquiry, and asked the partisans of Acacius, in what they considered the Son to be like unto the Father. They replied that the Son is similar in will only, but not in substance, and the others thereupon insisted that he is similar in substance, and convicted Acacius, by a work which he had formerly written, that he had once been of their opinion. Acacius replied that he ought not to be judged from his own writings, and the dispute had continued with heat for some time, when Eleusius, bishop of Cyzicus, spoke as follows, "It matters little to the council whether Mark or Basil has transgressed in any way, whether they or the adherents of Acacius have any accusation to bring against each other, neither does the trouble devolve upon the council of examining whether their formulary be commendable or otherwise. It is enough to maintain the formulary which has been already confirmed at Antioch by 97 priests, and if any one desire to introduce any doctrine which is not contained therein, he ought to be held as an alien to religion and the church." Those who were of his sentiments applauded his speech, and the assembly then arose and separated. The following day, the partisans of Acacius and of George refused to attend the council, and Lennes, who had now openly declared himself to be of their sentiments, likewise refused, in spite of all entreaties, to repair thither. Those who were deputed to request his attendance found the partisans of Acacius in his house, and he declined their invitation, under the plea that too much discord prevailed in the council, and that he had only been commanded by the emperor to attend the council in case of unanimity among the members. Much time was consumed in this way, and the partisans of Acacius were frequently solicited by the other bishops to attend the assemblies, but they sometimes demanded a special conference in the house of Lennes, and sometimes alleged that they had been commissioned by the emperor to judge those who had been accused, for they would not receive the creed adopted by the other bishops, nor clear themselves of the crimes of which they had been accused, neither would they examine the case of Cyril, whom they had deposed, and there was no one to compel them to do so. The council, however, eventually deposed George, bishop of Alexandria, Acacius, bishop of Caesarea, Uranius, bishop of Tyre, Patrophilus, bishop of Scythopolis, and Eudoxius, bishop of Antioch, and several other prelates. Many persons were likewise put out of communion until they could purge themselves of the crimes imputed to them. The transactions were conveyed in writing to the parish of each of the clergy. Adrian, 1, a presbyter of Antioch, was ordained bishop over the church, in room of Eudoxius, but the partisans of Acacius arrested him and delivered him over to Lennus and Laurisius. They committed him into the custody of the soldiers, but afterwards sent him into exile. We have now given a brief account of the termination of the Council of Seleucia. Those who desire more detailed information must seek it in the Acts of the Council, 2, which have been transcribed by attendant shorthand miters. Chapter 23. Acacius and issues, and how the deputies of the two councils of Ariminum and of Seleucia were led by the emperor to accept the same doctrines. Immediately after the above transactions, the adherents of Acacius repaired to the emperor, 1, but the other bishops returned to their respective homes. The 10 bishops who had been unanimously chosen as deputies to the emperor, met, on their arrival at the court, the 10 deputies, 2, of the council of Ariminum, and likewise the partisans of Acacius. These latter had gained over to their cause the chief men attached to the palace, and, through their influence, had secured the favor of the emperor. It was reported that some of these proselytes had espoused the sentiments of Acacius at some previous period, that some were bribed by means of the wealth belonging to the churches, and that others were seduced by the subtlety of the arguments presented to them, and by the dignity of the persuader. Acacius was, in fact, no common character. By nature he was gifted with great powers of intellect and eloquence, and he exhibited no want of skill or of address in the accomplishment of his schemes. He was the president of an illustrious church, and could boast of Eusebius Pamphilus as his teacher, whom he succeeded in the episcopate, and was more honorably known than any other man by the reputation and succession of his books. Endowed with all these advantages, he succeeded with ease in whatever he undertook. As there were at this period at Constantinople altogether 20 deputies, 10 from each council, besides many other bishops, who, from various motives, had repaired to the city, honorators, 3, whom the emperor, before his departure to the west, had constituted chief governor of Constantinople, received directions to examine, in the presence of the exarchs of the great council, the reports circulated concerning Eusebius and his heresy. Constantius, with some of the rulers, eventually undertook the investigation of this case, and as it was proved that Eusebius had introduced dogmas essentially opposed to the faith, the emperor and the other judges were offended at his blasphemous statements. It is said that the partisans of Acacius at first reigned ignorance of this heresy, for the purpose of inducing the emperor and those around him to take cognizance of it, for they imagined that the eloquence of Eusebius would be irresistible, that he would infallibly succeed in convincing his auditory, and that his heresy would conquer the unwilling. When, however, the result proved the futility of their expectations, they demanded that the formulary of faith accepted by the Council of Ariminum should receive the sanction of the deputies from the Council of Seleucia. As these latter protested that they would never renounce the use of the term substance, the Acacians declared to them upon oath that they did not hold the Son to be, in substance, dissimilar from the Father, but that, on the contrary, they were ready to denounce this opinion as heresy. They added that they esteemed the formulary compiled by the Western bishops at Ariminum the more highly, because the word substance had been unexpectedly expunged from it, because, they said, if this formulary were to be received, there would be no further mention, either of the word substance or of the term consubstantial, to which many of the Western priests were, from their reverence for the Nicaean Council, peculiarly attached. It was for these reasons that the emperor approved of the formulary, and when he recalled to mind the great number of bishops who had been convened at Ariminum, and reflected that there is no error in saying either that the Son is like unto the Father or of the same substance as the Father, and when he further considered that no difference in signification would ensue, if, for terms which do not occur in Scripture, other equivalent and uncontrovertible expressions were to be substituted, such, for instance, as the word similar, he determined upon giving his sanction to the formulary. Such being his own sentiments, he commanded the bishops to accept the formulary. The next day preparations were made for the pompous ceremony of proclaiming him consul, which, according to the Roman custom, took place in the beginning of the month of January, and the whole of that day and part of the ensuing night the emperor spent with the bishops, and at length succeeded in persuading the deputies of the Council of Seleucia to receive the formulary transmitted from Ariminum. Chapter 24 – Formulary of the Council of Ariminum approved by the Acacians. List of the deposed chief priests, and the causes of their condemnation. The partisans of Acacius, 4, remained some time at Constantinople, and invited thither several bishops of Bithynia, among whom were Maris, bishop of Chalcedon, and Ulfilas, bishop of the Goths. These prelates having assembled together, in number about 50, they confirmed the formulary read at the Council of Ariminum, adding this provision, that the terms substance and hypostasis should never again be used in reference to God. They also declared that all other formularies set forth in times past, as likewise those that might be compiled at any future period, should be condemned. They then deposed Aetius from his office of deacon, because he had written works full of contention and of a species of vain knowledge opposed to the ecclesiastical vocation, because he had used in writing and in disputation several impious expressions, and because he had been the occasion of troubles and seditions in the church. It was alleged by many that they did not depose him willingly, but merely because they wished to remove all suspicion from the mind of the emperor which be had with regard to them, for they had been accused of holding Aetian views. Those who held these sentiments took advantage of the resentment with which, for reasons above mentioned, the emperor regarded Macedonius, and they accordingly deposed him, and likewise Eleusius, bishop of Cyzicus, Basil, bishop of Ancyra, Hortasius, bishop of Sardis, and Draconius, bishop of Pergamus. Although they differed about doctrine from those bishops, yet in deposing them, no blame was thrown upon their faith, but charges were alleged against them in common with all, that they had disturbed the peace and violated the laws of the church. They specified, in particular, that when the presbyter Diogenes was travelling from Alexandria to Ancyra, Basil seized his papers, and struck him. They also deposed that Basil had, without trial, delivered over many of the clergy from Antioch, from the banks of the Euphrates, and from Cilicia, Galatia, and Asia, to the rulers of the provinces, to be exiled and subjected to cruel punishments, so that many had been loaded with chains, and had been compelled to bribe the soldiers, who were conducting them away, not to ill-use them. They added that, on one occasion, when the emperor had commanded Aetius and some of his followers to be led before Cecropius, that they might answer to him for various accusations laid to their charge, Basil recommended the person who was entrusted with the execution of this edict to act according to the dictates of his own judgment. They said that he wrote directions to Hermogenes, 1, the prefect and governor of Syria, stating who were to be banished, and whither they were to be sent, and that, when the exiles were recalled by the emperor, he would not consent to their return, but opposed himself to the wishes of the rulers and of the priests. They further deposed that Basil had excited the clergy of Sirmium against Germanius, and that, although he stated in writing that he had admitted Germanius, Valens, and Ursacius into communion, he had placed them as criminals before the tribunal of the African bishops, and that, when taxed with this deed, he had denied it, and perjured himself, and that, when he was afterwards convicted, he strove to justify his perjury by sophistical reasoning. They added, that he had been the cause of contention and of sedition in Illyria, Italy, Africa, and in the Roman Church, that he had thrown a servant into prison to compel her to bear false witness against her mistress, that he had baptized a man of loose life, who lived in illicit intercourse with a woman, and had promoted him to be a deacon, that he had neglected to excommunicate a quack doctor who had occasioned the death of several persons, and that he and some of the clergy had bound themselves by oath before the holy table, not to bring accusations against each other. This, they said, was an artifice adopted by the president of the clergy to shield himself from the accusations of his plaintiffs. In short, Such were the reasons they specified for the deposition of Basil. Astartheus, they said, was deposed because, when a presbyter, he had been condemned and put away from the communion of prayers by Eulalius, his own father, who was bishop of the church of Caesarea in Cappadocia, and also because he had been excommunicated by a council held at Neo-Caesarea, a city of Pontus, and deposed by Eusebius, bishop of Constantinople, for unfaithfulness in the discharge of certain duties that had devolved upon him. He had also been deprived of his bishopric by those who were convened in Gangro, on account of his having taught, acted, and thought contrary to sound doctrine. He had been convicted of perjury by the Council of Antioch. He had likewise endeavored to reverse the decrees of those convened at Mytina, and, although he was guilty of many crimes, he had the assurance to aspire to be judge over the others, and to stigmatize them as heretics. They deposed Eleusius because he had raised inconsiderately one Heraclius, a native of Tyre, to be a deacon. This man had been a priest of Hercules at Tyre, had been accused of and tried for sorcery, and, therefore, had retired to Cyzicus and feigned conversion to Christianity. And moreover, Eleusius, after having been apprised of these circumstances, had not driven him from the church. He had also, without inquiry, ordained certain individuals, who had come to Cyzicus, after they had been condemned by Marius, bishop of Chalcedonia, who participated in this council. Hortasius was deposed because he had been ordained bishop of Sardis without the sanction of the bishops of Lydia. They deposed Draconius, bishop of Pergamus, because he had previously held another bishopric in Galatia, and because, they stated, he had on both occasions been unlawfully ordained. After these transactions, a second assembly of the council was held, and Silvanus, bishop of Daucus, Sophronius, bishop of Pompeiopolis in Paphlagonia, Elpidius, bishop of Sidala, and Ninas, bishop of Seleucia in Isauria, were deposed. The reason they assigned for the deposition of Silvanus was that he had constituted himself the leader of a foolish party in Seleucia and Constantinople. He had, besides, constituted Theophilus as president of the church of Castabella, who had been previously ordained bishop of Eleutheropolis by the bishops of Palestine, and who had promised upon oath that he would never accept any other bishopric without their permission. Sophronius was deposed on account of his avarice, and on account of his having sold some of the offerings presented to the church, for his own profit. Besides, after he had received a first and second summons to appear before the council, he could, at last, be scarcely induced to make his appearance, and then, instead of replying to the accusations brought against him, he appealed to other judges. Ninas was deposed for having resorted to violence in his endeavors to procure the ordination in his own church, of Anianus, who had been appointed bishop of Antioch, 1, and for having ordained as bishops certain individuals who had previously been engaged in politics, and who were utterly ignorant of the Holy Scriptures and of ecclesiastical canons, and who, after their ordination, preferred the enjoyment of their property to that of the priestly dignity, and declared in writing that they would rather take charge of their own possessions than to discharge the episcopal functions without them. Elpidius was deposed because he had participated in the malpractices of Basil, and had occasioned great disorders, and because he had, contrary to the decrees of the Council of Mytina, restored to his former rank in the presbytery a man named Eusebius, who had been deposed for having created Nectaria a deaconess, after she had been excommunicated on account of violating agreements and oaths, and to confer this honor upon her was clearly contrary to the laws of the church.